Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Monday Night Raw. Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Monday Night Raw.
So, Darren, I thought Drew McIntyre and New Day made some good points. And Michael Cole said the same thing. They both made good points. Drew McIntyre got cheers for telling Miz to shut up every time Miz tried to kiss up to him. But then Drew left Kofi and Xavier as Ivar attacked them once again. I'm enjoying the slow way that they're telling Drew's story, and I like how much they're pulling from the journey that we've seen Drew on, the callback to Clash at the Castle, Jey Uso being part of what cost him his chance to regain his title. I even like the mention of Cody and how Cody, the implication was, hey, he took your spot, in so many words. Tell me what you thought of the exchange today between New Day and Drew, and kind of the point that I'm making, which I'm enjoying that they're telling the story slowly in a way where I'm actually a little less convinced that Drew McIntyre comes out of this as a full-fledged heel. I still think that's where we're headed, but I'm less convinced after tonight because, you know, Drew's telling Miz to shut up and he's making some good points. And maybe we're just on a journey where Drew is a player in the ultimate acceptance of Jey, but it takes a little while. Your thoughts?
Yeah, it's some good storytelling there. And they have not overtly said that he's going heel because, again, standing up to Miz is something that's going to get him cheered, and it definitely did. So I like that, and it kind of refers back to what my original thoughts on this were, that maybe they're just kind of giving him an edge because the things that they brought up were true. And of course, you know, a good heel believes, you know, that he's in the right anyway, and this kind of, you know, backs up the story a bit. But I'm not totally convinced, as you said, that he's going heel. But in fact, the New Day were kind of being jerks to him a little bit, so he's kind of justified in standing up to him also. So,
and unless you're like between 8 and 12 years old, Xavier Woods is the most obnoxious character in all of professional wrestling, so you can't cheer him.
Yeah, kind of siding with Drew a little bit.
Yes.
For his comebacks. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting where this goes afterwards to see. I mean, right now he's kind of justified in his attitude a little bit. Sure, he could have gone back and saved them, but after their exchange, I could see why he didn't. But yeah, it's an interesting twist that's going on there.
And you brought up a good point. Drew getting an edge back, I think, is good. I don't think Drew was in a position as of, you know, 2 months ago and 4 months ago to be seen as a top-tier guy who could be a world champion in a way that would kind of move the needle or make a difference. I think he was a similar version of what Cody has become, and that spot was taken by Cody, who was the, you know, shinier, newer toy. They're both about the same age, but, you know, Cody had been gone a while and you know, did his own thing, and Drew got a little stale. So if this just turns out that Drew's a baby face with an edge and they kind of reframe him, I'm for that too. This could turn out to be good. I still think he ultimately turns heel. But I like that WWE is, as I said, telling this one kind of chapter at a time and taking their time with it, where we're along for the ride, and we're going to experience in real time Drew's emotions and find ourselves maybe conflicted, maybe sympathizing with him. If he turns heel, ultimately he'll do something, hopefully other than turn on Kofi and Xavier, because I don't think fans would 100%. But, you know, the Jey Uso situation and Cody is going to be interesting too. You know, if Drew turns on Cody and Drew gets this edge to him, he's telling Miz to shut up, and if Cody starts to, you know, get a little stale, or I don't know. There's just this chance that I could see it backfiring a little bit if they're not careful, with some fans siding with Robert Cody. I don't think we're there at this point, but having seen it in AEW, different setting, different fan base, learn their lessons. Cody's more disciplined. But there's still, in the back of my mind, there's always that thing, which is, are fans going to grow kind of tired of what Cody's doing? And if he's against the kind of the wrong opponent, I guess I'll say, in a Drew with an edge to him again, if I'm WWE, I'm at least on guard for that.
Sure. Yeah, it's good nuanced storytelling. And there's only room for one just sappy baby face who's out there taking selfies with the fans and, you know, oh, you're such a great crowd type of guy. And, of course, that spot is Cody right now. And before he got in, that to some extent was Drew. I mean, did not really have – I mean, he was tough and respected, but didn't have that edge. He was just very kind of kissing up to the fans. And you could keep him babyface, but you've got to separate him from Cody somehow. So at least now they've got options on how to go with him. If the fans do turn against Cody, which I see happening at some point, not right now, I don't think by any means, but at some point I think the act could get a little bit tired unless they do some tweaks to Cody as well. At least they kind of have a backup here.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. So talk about what you thought of what Cody did tonight. You know, I mean, they couldn't do another week of him getting interrupted almost immediately, but he did get interrupted a little after speaking a little bit and interacted with Dom. You know, Dom and Cody interacted a bit, and obviously that's a good way to keep Cody babyface because fans love booing Dom. But yeah, what would you think in particular, since we're talking about him, of how Cody came across in that opening segment?
He was fine. I really enjoyed when he comes to the ring because I think it's sincere how much he likes the fans and enjoys getting them riled up. And the kids and stuff were just so happy to see him. So I really appreciated that. But as far as the in-ring stuff, I like the save. Obviously, anybody who's going to come in and pull Dom off the apron is going to get the big pop, and he does that so well. But the brawling and stuff, he was fine. Yeah, I mean, he's good at what he does, and the fans are accepting of it for now. Yes, I would continue going on that road for Cody.
Yeah, and we had the return of JD McDonagh. There's so many, like, I say this every week now, but there's so many moving parts. You kind of need a flow chart in your head of, okay, Jay gets along with Sammy, but not KO. Drew doesn't trust Jay because of a completely different reason. Cody says, I'm not best friends with Jay, but I think he deserves another chance. You've got Damian Priest not wanting JD McDonagh in Judgment Day. You got Rhea Ripley, who's being attacked by Nia Jax, and she's out of action. And so what's going to go on with Dom and Rhea? It's just everything. I mean, New Day and Drew now, and Drew anti Miz, not you know, having anything nice to say about him. It's just one thing after another, all this dynamic. And I don't recall seeing WWE or, frankly, any wrestling company manage this many diverse interpersonal relationships that largely align with their characters but also push the limits or test things a little bit. You got Sammy and KO's popular team. One's pro-J, one's anti-J. You got Drew in a point of transition. You got JD McDonagh in a heel faction. You got Priest still being a heel, but not liking JD. I think they're pulling this all off. This is not something I would have dreamed of the writing team 5 or 10 or 15 years ago being able to pull off right now. And I don't know that pro wrestling is made for this level of nuance, but every week they're making it work for me.
Yeah, it's engaging, the different relationships and the nuances and stuff, but I will say that some of it is repetitive. It's every week. It's Judgment Day, you know, overcoming the odds, cheating, and fighting the Sammy, KO, Cody team. And I'm just ready for something to happen. Like, I understand the relationships and everything that's going on, and that's fine, but I'm ready for something definitive to happen, somebody to split off finally, for JD and Priest to go at it, for something to happen. It's just, I understand some measured storytelling and whatnot, but it's getting to be a much for me, and this is just me. It's getting to be a bit much, a little bit repetitive for me.
All fair points. It crossed my mind when deciding how to introduce today's post show, because there is an aspect, as much as they're pulling it off, and I want to compliment them for that, and I'm intrigued with where it ends up. I'm not saying they're spinning their wheels, because I think we saw enough. I'm interested enough in how they all play off each other, and I'm interested in not having everyone – I appreciate that everyone's not acting in a hasty manner, that, you know, Drew's going to snap or KO's going to snap or Priest is going to snap, not because, well, we don't want to be repetitive or boring. They're going to snap when it sort of seems naturally the time for them to do it, which does mean building it up for several weeks instead of just rushing into it. So I don't want to be critical of it, but I am aware that that is a downside to the way that they're telling this story. You know, there is the aspect of if someone says, oh, I missed Raw last night, I was watching football, what happened? What would your answer be? You know,
right.
You know, I thought of it.
I
didn't see it tonight. What happened? And then you would start explaining it, and they'd be like, wait, I think that happened last week. I meant this week's show. So, and again, if you really compare the shows side by side, different things happened, but not in a big way. It just was the furthering of things. So, I'm enjoying it, but you know, we only got one more Raw before the next pay-per-view, whatever. Is it Payback? They got no mercy as an NXT brand. They're messing me up.
Is it Fastlane?
It's Fastlane. We just had Payback. Yeah. Okay. It was Payback, and then No Mercy's become an NXT show, and then it's Fastlane. Which doesn't make any sense, because Fastlane was originally, I think, the one between the Rumble and WrestleMania. It's like, rather Fastlane to WrestleMania.
Right.
I mean, I should, you know, obviously I should know this, but I got it wrong accidentally a couple times, and then I'm just totally, like, you know, concerned I'm going to screw up again. So, which I sort of did anyway. Okay, so, yes, we have Fastlane on October 7th, then Halloween Havoc on the end of October, whatever day of the week it's going to be on, and then Crown Jewel November 4th, and then Survivor Series a couple weeks later. So that's your fall schedule, people. What's after Survivor Series, since I got this in front of me? So they got an NXT, probably an NXT special, and nothing in December on the calendar. So
right.
Crown Jewel and Survivor Series doubleheader in November, but then they're skipping December again this year, unless they add something, which they could. But I don't think anything else has been announced, unless what I'm looking at is dated. Anyway, well, Darren, let's pause and introduce the show. We got more to talk about from tonight's show, including the chaos and the main event involving all the people we've been talking about, some hype for NXT No Mercy, and more. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Monday, September 25th, 2023. I'm Wade Keller, the host of the show, the editor and publisher and the founder of the Pro Wrestling Torch Weekly Newsletter and the website pwtorch.com, and the host of this, the Wade Keller Post Show, also the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, and also a variety of other VIP exclusive podcasts that you have to be a VIP member to hear, pwtorch.com/goVIP if you want details on our VIP lineup. The other voice you hear on tonight's show is Darren Lilly. He is a PW Torch contributor, both on the VIP audio side and also pwtorch.com, with his focus, his beat, being Impact Wrestling. But he joins me roughly every 3 weeks here covering Raw. Darren, welcome back to the co-host chair.
Well, thanks for having me. Looking forward to talking some Raw tonight.
Yes, so we've talked a bit here. Let's bring some callers into the mix. If you are live streaming the show and want to call in, I'll remind you of our number, 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1. That flags you on our switchboard so we know you want to be on the show. You can also email us at wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. During NFL season, I know a lot of you are NFL fans. We got NFL games going on during and right after Raw. Some of you don't watch Raw live, or you're flipping back and forth. So if you are somebody who watches Raw live and you're not an NFL fan, this is a call out to you to help add to our callers and our emails. So if you've been a wallflower, or you're new to the show, or you've been shy, consider this an invite and a nudge to participate by call or email, especially during NFL season where some of our regulars drop off. All right, so let's go to our first caller of the day, which is Ian in Tennessee, and then after that it's Dave in Holyoke. Ian, thanks for calling. Good to hear from you again. What's on your mind tonight?
So I'm watching the NFL game, but I was watching live because my Tampa Bay team absolutely got creamed tonight, so I'm done. But I wanted to add to you guys' talk on the Drew McIntyre thing because I've actually been a really big fan of it, and I feel like he's getting into the tweener area where he's going to be like a face with a heel attitude. But I was curious, do you see possibly him having if he does go full heel, which is what they're hinting at, do you see him possibly having a feud with Cody Rhodes if Cody wins the title, if he does get traded to SmackDown, which I know is what everyone's talking about? Do you see that happening by chance because of what Miz brought up?
Darren, what do you think?
Yeah, I could see it headed towards a Cody feud, and I think they could get a lot of mileage out of that. I really hope it does go in that direction, especially before either of them get possibly traded. And I like that they kept that aspect alive, and it is going to happen, so it's not something that they're going to drop as an aside. But, yeah, I would really like to see it go that way. They've got history, and they're two of the more prominent names. And in the ring, I think they deliver some good matches. So, yeah, I hope it goes that way.
And what do you think, and do you think there's any chance they get a different crowd reaction than what they're going to be hoping for?
That's the interesting point. Sorry, go ahead, Darren.
No, yeah, go right ahead.
You know, I think that's the very interesting thing is if they keep Cody feuding with Dom, because I don't think they have Cody booked for Fastlane. Maybe that's where they're going. You know, they could keep Cody on SmackDown and possibly have – you know, they drop the whole brand split and have them go back and forth, which is what they have Judgment Day do. But I think that will be the very difficult point is how do you keep Drew heel and keep Cody face by keeping them away from each other?
Yeah. If they send Cody to SmackDown, I don't think they're going to drop the brand split, and I don't think they should, unless you're a champion, then you get to float. And so then the question is, how do they cross paths or is that what they're waiting for? Like, they're going to play out the Drew storyline before Cody gets moved to SmackDown, but maybe they get one match out of him. Timeline-wise, it's tough to have a full-fledged feud, but it might be something they want to plant the seed for and revisit later. I don't want to get too convoluted and predicting too many changes, but if The Rock takes on Roman Reigns and Cody needs something big at WrestleMania – and Seth feels redundant, maybe a heel Drew McIntyre makes some sense. But there's so many paths they could take between now and Mania and depending on, again, what they lock in for Roman. Ian, back to you.
Yeah, and you brought up Seth, which is my next point. I don't think WWE has completely forgotten about, you know, the Shinsuke feud, which has been absolutely phenomenal for Shinsuke. I love that he's getting this recognition. They did a Last Man Standing, and during Shinsuke's promo or his vignette and Seth's promo, I half-heartedly thought they were going to go with an I Quit match. Do you think that's what they should have done, or do you think they just do Last Man Standing because that's what fans are more used to?
Darren, what do you think about that?
Hey, could be either or. The Last Man Standing match, it's dramatic, and that's fine to go that direction. I mean, I Quit is, no, it could be either or, honestly, but yeah, the Last Man Standing stipulation is fine, and this will give them a chance to redeem themselves. I think the last match, I mean, it was fine, but much a little bit to be desired for me anyway. So this format is a little more dramatic, and I think they can have more elements to play off of. So I think it's a chance for redemption for both of them.
Yeah, I don't have a strong feeling either way, but Last Man Standing allows a very different format and a different approach to getting having the drama before the finish. And it also, I think, I mean, either way plays into Seth with the back injury, but you can have in a last man standing situation a long, you know, the 10 counts and the struggle, and, oh, is he going to be able to stand? Is this the last time? Is this the last time we'll see him even in the ring? They can really draw that out with the longer counts, but I guess you can do that with the announcers if someone is in a submission hold too. I really don't have a strong feeling either way on it.
And, you know, who do you see? Do you see Seth retaining and having Priest cash in? Because I know that Michael Cole was kind of hinting at that towards the end with the Money in the Bank. Do you see Seth keeping the belt till Crown Jewel? Do you see him doing, if they do like the champion versus champion thing, do you see him facing Roman? Where do you see them going with Seth moving forward if he does retain?
Yeah, so I definitely don't see them doing champ versus champ at Survivor Series. I think they've dropped that, and I'm glad, and it would be the wrong time and place to do it. I think they want to keep – I guess it – because there's not a – I don't think there is a December pay-per-view or PLE. So whatever happens at Survivor Series is going to set up some TV matches during the holidays, but mostly the next thing that happens is going to be at Royal Rumble. And I don't think they want Priest carrying the title until then. But you could have Priest cash in, hold it, and defend it perhaps at Survivor Series, or be part of the Judgment Day team and not defend it. It almost doesn't matter who has the belt at Survivor Series, because I assume they're going to have a big, massive tag team match, which I think the end of Raw gave us a teaser of. And so then you could have Priest.
I know that they're teasing War Games too. So that's where I think they're going with it.
Yes, exactly. I mean, Survivor Series is based on a big tag team against a big tag team, and if you put them in two rings and drop a cage around it, you elevate it to War Games. It doesn't matter who's champion in that match. They're not going to defend the title or lose it. So Priest could cash in and win it, and Seth could chase him all the way to the Rumble, and then that could be one of your featured matches is, can Seth get it back at the Rumble, or do they keep it on Priest? And then you have a whole array of options when it comes to that, because if Priest manages to retain at the Rumble, suddenly he's one of the co-headliners, one of the Knights of Mania, and it opens up a whole array of possible, presumably baby faces, who would win the Rumble and potentially face him. But if he breaks up a Judgment Day because he's tired of JD McDonagh and Balor and Dom side with him, Priest could be a baby face by then too. I like the array of options that all seem viable, feasible, and I think actually pretty good directions that they could go. I mean, people are going to have their preferences, but the idea that it's just not locked in when we imagine what they might do at Fastlane, the Survivor Series, and the Rumble when it comes to the World Championship is actually, I think, a feature, not a flaw right now. Darren, how about you? How do you see things playing out?
I think Seth is going to keep it for a while. I just don't think they're ready to pull the trigger on Priest just yet. I could see the scenario I see unfolding is him cashing in and JD costing the shot, and that leads to his exit from the Judgment Day, Priest's exit from the Judgment Day to set him going face, and that way him losing the case doesn't make him look bad. It's just part of the transition of his story of turning face. That's where I see it going. If you were to put the belt on him, fine. I mean, it's a good time because, I mean, the business doesn't depend on who's champion because they got things going pretty well right now, so you could absolutely do it. But I see them keeping it on Seth right now, kind of keeping him as a centerpiece.
Ian, back to you.
Yeah, you know, I've seen a lot of theories about how the Money in the Bank would work out. I've heard theories of when JD gave Damian the one that he has, he took the contract from it and put in another one, and Finn would actually have the contract. But that's what a lot of people think. You know how these fans get. But my final question for you guys is, I'm not a big fan of how they handled Gable with the Intercontinental Championship. They kind of just like pushed him away with the Bronson Reed, and I like that Bronson's getting TV time, but Gable had like a rocket ship attached to him, and they kind of just butchered it with Ciampa now feuding with Gunther. Why do you guys think that they just like basically took the push away from Gable?
I just don't think when they went into it that they thought that Gable is going to be a long-term opponent for Gunther, because I think whoever beats Gunther, it's going to be it's going to be somebody who they believe can be elevated as a top-tier star. And I don't think they think Chad Gable has that upside in him, and I think they're right. And I didn't know that until he got this chance. I think he did very well in the ring. I think as a character, there's just something about him that isn't a serious person. And when he tries to be serious, I don't think he's very compelling. I just don't think he rose to the occasion as a character on promos. And so I think that they're right in not going all in with him at the expense of the thing you can only do once, which is who ends Gunther's Intercontinental record length, Intercontinental title reign. And I think you want that to be somebody. I do want to say this. If Gable ended his run, it's a terrible booking move. But I'm in the position where I'm like, I don't blame them at all for not doing it. I'll put it that way. Because I don't think Gable beating Gunther is going to make Gable someone you can main event pay-per-views with or build around. Gable's been around a long time. This is a fun foray into a semi-main single spot. But I just don't think he's showing himself to be somebody you want to spend that the guy who wins Gunther's reign. I don't think you want to spend that on him. Different people are going to have different opinions on him, but that's where I am, and I think that's where they are. I don't think they ever intended for him to do it. But the fact that tonight he's talking about he's still got his sights set on him and he wants to, you know, re-earn his way to another title shot. I mean, we are going to get another title match. And I wouldn't, you know, when he did promise he was going to win it for his daughter. So maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they just want to do it on a bigger stage with Gable. And you know, it'll be at a PLE, and they'll put a major storyline into it, and they're going to give him a long run with the belt, and then Gunther will move on to something else. I mean, I could be wrong, but I don't sense that right now, and it wouldn't be the move that I would make. Darren, I'm curious for your thoughts on how Gable's doing and what you make of him tonight saying he's still got a sight set on that belt.
Yeah, I was kind of disappointed in the segment because he just came off as kind of goofy again. I was like, this is a guy you can't take seriously. And I thought he had made a little bit of a breakthrough in the feud that he had for the Intercontinental title. But I think this kind of regressed the character. It's like, oh, he's back into goofy mode again. He'll be doing right. The shush again. So I just kind of lost enthusiasm for it. Sure, they could come back. I just don't think they had the faith in it. They wouldn't have portrayed him like that if they were serious about him winning the title. Yeah, it looks like they're going to revisit it. They're keeping that portion of the story alive. But I don't have faith that he's the guy that they're picking to win this.
Yeah. Ian, what do you think of what I had to say about that?
I mean, yeah, I get the whole Gable thing, and you know, it was sad because he was getting like massive reactions to it at the main event, and it was just kind of like, well, he's done. So without do you see Ciampa beating Gunther, or who do you see Gunther possibly losing the belt to? Because I think whenever Gunther loses a belt, I think he hopefully would get pushed up to like Seth level, like world heavyweight championship level. So where do you see who do you see Gunther losing his belt to, and do you see Gunther getting pushed up to like Seth level or Roman's level with a world title?
I would vote for Gunther being at that level, at a world title level. I wouldn't even mind, and it's way down the line, of Gunther beating a babyface Roman a year and a half from now, but he holds the IC title, even maybe until then, maybe he never loses it. I think that highly of him and the job that he's done. I don't have an obvious name coming to mind who I think who would benefit the most and is a perfect person to end Gunther's reign. Darren, I'll throw to you while I think through that a little more. I feel like I had come up with a name once for someone, but it's not jumping out to me right now.
I didn't have an obvious name either, but it would be I'd maybe have like a debuting NXT person, like a Bron Breakker or a Melo come in and beat him, kind of like almost like a fluke, and then Gunther moves on to main event to being a top tier guy. I could see that happening, and that way one of the NXT people gets the rub. And he's the guy that beat Gunther, who's now, you know, the main event guy. So that would be a good jumping off point. But other than that, nobody really, I don't think Ciampa is going to be the guy that beats him. I just can't see that. But yeah, it's kind of wide open. But, and it's a lot you can do with whoever eventually gets that. But, you know, who knows? He might hang on to that for like a year and just relinquishes it when he gets the world title, perhaps.
Yeah, and I'm genuinely fine with that, too. You could, I mean, if you really want to elevate Jay, he could be the one. You know, if you're like, all right, we need Jay to have, he's not going to beat Roman. He's not going to beat Seth. Maybe Jay beats a heel Drew if Drew beats Seth at some point, or Drew beats Cody and then Jay. But, you know, Jay, you could give that win to him, and I think it would solidify him in the eyes of fans in almost a meta sense, how management is committed to him now, because he got that special moment of ending the record-length IC title reign. Ian, back to you.
Yeah, I was thinking Jay, but I was also thinking about while you guys were talking about who could beat Gunther. I could see them having a lengthy feud with Ilya Dragunov coming up from NXT.
Oh yeah,
Ilya
yeah.
has
yeah.
beaten Gunther like 2 times, and they've had like 5-star matches. So I could see that happening, and Gunther being like, "Well, I've never beaten Ilya. This is when I can get my revenge." And then Ilya beats him, and that's what makes Gunther a high-level guy. But my final point is, do you see, I mean, Wayne, I kind of hinted to, do you see them continuing this Judgment Day feud into a Survivor Series War Games, or do you see Cody going to SmackDown and then possibly Drew has, like, the final face turn save and joins team Sammy and Kevin at Survivor Series? I know that's a few months away, but this is like your bold early prediction.
Yeah. Darren, I'll throw you first on that one. But yeah, Drew is, could, you know, does he team with them? And a big mystery is, you know, who does he stay loyal to? If Priest were to leave, this would be such a weird choice, but if Priest were to leave Judgment Day, could Drew join? Could he end up being in the spot that Priest is in?
It's certainly a way to go. And I could see this all building up to a big pop for Drew coming in, making the save for Sammy and KO or something like that. It's kind of intriguing. If they were to move Cody over to SmackDown, you've got to have somebody fill in that spot. And why not have Drew with an edge do that? So that's an intriguing possibility.
Yeah, yeah. Ian, good thoughts. Did I answer your question or not?
I mean, it's a fairly early prediction. I mean, there's a lot of moving pieces, and I really have been enjoying WWE the past few Raws. I mean, they keep the storylines going, and they keep giving you, like, wild turns of, well, you thought this was going here, and we tricked you. We're going this way. Because, I mean, Triple H, he loves his long-term storytelling. But I will let you guys get to your other callers. It's always great to talk to you guys.
And great talking to you, too. Cool. All right, let's go to, as noted, Dave in Holyoke, Mass. Dave, good to hear from you. What's on your mind about Raw tonight?
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Good.
I echo kind of some of the stuff you guys have said, particularly about storyline-wise, it definitely seems like we are, not for better or worse, but it's definitely starting to pick up back into more of a soap opera type vibe with, you know, the different storylines and interweaving of the storylines and everyone feeling, you know, for the most part feeling like they have, and as you mentioned, it's starting to feel at least slightly like can't miss TV. You know, you certainly can miss it, but it's a lot. You feel like you're now actually catching up on something when you miss it, right? As opposed to, all right, there were some matches, there's a promo that didn't matter, I can fast forward. You know, I used to just DVR everything, and it was great, you know, because you could watch the million hours of TV each week in like an hour and 15 minutes because nothing really mattered all that much.
Yeah, and there are some good wrestling going on, too, on these shows. I mean, Otis and Bronson was good, and Ciampa and Kaiser was good. I'm trying to think what else stood out besides the main event. Drew and Kofi. That was good, and then the main event tag was good. I mean, you're getting rewarded if you're, you know, different people have different things that they like about pro wrestling, but you're not going to watch pro wrestling the way it's presented on American national cable if you don't like both the wrestling and the soap opera aspect and the characters and the storylines. And Raw's giving you a dose of both right now. I mean, they have a talented roster of wrestlers wrestling a diverse style. You know, we saw Dragon Lee give Dominic a good showing tonight too. So, it just was a good mix of matches tonight too.
Yeah, so
Darren,
do
you want to add anything to that?
Sure. Yeah. If you're actually tuning in to watch the show, they give you some good entertainment value out of it, but you're also competing against football, sometimes two games. And if somebody's like, hey, that Kofi versus Ivar match was really good, it's like, I don't know if that's necessarily going to take you away from a compelling, or Nia Jax is on, that's not going to necessarily take you away from a compelling football game. And that's something to keep in mind also. I mean, the action that they have, not necessarily Nia, but the action is good, but it's going to, and they've hit some record lows over the last couple of weeks. That's something to keep in mind as well. Yeah, you're putting on a decent product, but I don't know if the casual viewer is necessarily compelled by some of the in-ring stuff that they're putting on.
All right, Dave, back to you.
Yeah, I think it's tough sometimes because I watch my weekly TV for the storyline, and then your premium live event is your action, right? You know, that's, you want the good matches on the pay-per-view style stuff, and you want your good promos, your good backstage segments, your good story building on your cable TV. And yeah, I mean, I could certainly see that stuff not gripping people. You know, when NXT Black and Gold was kind of at its prime, I was never missing it because the storytelling was so good, but then you also just had these amazing matches that, you know, you knew week in, week out you were going to get. And I think Raw and SmackDown are designed that way, but they're still a little inconsistent with the actual matches. So you're tuning into the storyline, but you know that you don't expect every week that you're going to get some sort of barn burner match. And so you're not necessarily compelled to, you know, if you're a wrestling fan in general to, you know, lock in because, you know, you see a Miz, you know, with a Miz Austin Theory match and say, okay, well, you know, do I really need to stick around and watch something like this?
Darren, talk about that.
Right. It's kind of like we alluded to earlier. It's like, yes, we were entertained by the thing, but if you were to discuss it with someone, like, what did I miss? Like, some plot points, definitely, and some, you know, more arguing between Priest and JD, which has kind of happened prior. It's a little bit repetitive. They need to shake it up just a little bit. I do appreciate the long-term storytelling, but the other half of that is that there is a lot of repetition, and they're filling time with just matches again, like I just referred to, that while fine in the ring, are not necessarily going to bring in new people or casual viewers. So it's going to be interesting to see how they continue as they kind of struggle against football this year.
And I think what they're trying to do is just, Dave, satisfy people who tune in with the product that they deliver to them in terms of character development, people you're rooting for, people you're rooting against, interpersonal dynamics that are intriguing, that have a story arc that's not rushed, it's not drawn out too slowly, it's logical, and give you some good wrestling. You know, if there's going to be acts that they believe in that the public that a lot of fans don't, and there's going to be people who the fans want to see pushed more or harder, who they have their reasons not to, and that's part of it, but that's always part of pro wrestling. But if the product overall is otherwise really good, and they are putting on good matches, good promos, good storylines, I mean, I think they can overcome some second-guessing by fans over someone getting pushed or not pushed enough. But yeah, I mean, I don't think they're trying to hotshot anything right now. You know, I don't think like they're desperate, like, oh, we're against Monday Night Football, we need to hotshot. I think they just are like, right, we're a TV series, and we have a long-term plan, and we believe in it. We're going to stick with it. You know, it's sticking with your running game when you're down 20 points, but it's early in the third quarter and you feel you can get away with it. I mean, they're not just going all pass or doing trick plays. I think they believe in their product and they're making a lot of money. And they think there's bigger things that are more important than short-term trying to please everybody or trying to shock people into watching instead of football. I think they kind of know those days are over. But what you want is a good buzz that the show is enjoyable for people who are watching it. Dave, back to you. You can elaborate on that or follow up if you'd like on any of that.
I just had a couple questions about, I guess, you know, breakups or potential breakups. You know, with Imperium, for weeks now, maybe longer than that, it seems like they've been, you know, the tension's building. Gunter's upset with sort of the lack of production with the rest of the guys. And so they've been sort of just building, I'll do it myself, I don't need you guys. And so I don't know if they eventually do kind of break that up, and if they do, I think Gunter's okay still. You know, I think he can run a very similar gimmick and still be successful and still be good to watch. You know, with any breakup, you're always concerned about what happens to sort of the also-ran of the groups. So, you know, if Imperium does eventually implode, what do you think happens with the other two guys?
I think they think that Kaiser is someone that they can split off and turn into something as a babyface or a heel, probably a babyface. And that seems to be, it's not obvious or for sure, but kind of where they're going, that he's the one being verbally abused and Vinci is the one who's, you know, causing the problem, and nobody's acting like super admirable. They're not trying to be super black and white with it, but they have shown in match finishes the way that they book and what you can read into. They've been trying to protect him a little bit, I think. So, Darren, what do you think? What is the long-term future of all three Imperium members?
Yeah, it certainly looks like they're going to split off, and that's fine. I think the act works fine as it is, but it looks like they want to go in a different direction. I think they got Kaiser. He showed some good range in that feud with the Alpha team, and when he was playing off against Maxine, I think he showed like a lot of promise there, so I think he did well for himself. Vinci, on the other hand, just the way they book him, I don't know if they necessarily see a lot in him. If he were to go off on his own, I would be very concerned.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure how much range he's showing and what he has to offer in the ring. I would be a little bit worried about him splitting off.
Yeah, I definitely don't think Vinci is like a priority for them. I don't think he's a problem. I don't think he's like bad. But I think they look at Kaiser as someone who, man, maybe we can do something with him of more significance, kind of like they were, you know, maybe thinking with Chad Gable. And, you know, you test people, you put them in a position where you ask them to rise to the occasion and they deliver or they don't as a character and in the ring. But, you know, Kaiser's somebody where when he wrestles, it's like you want to pay attention, you want to watch. He's really good. And I think he probably has a potential to be a really strong babyface on that roster. Yeah. Dave, back to you.
Yeah, I agree. Next potential breakup thing. Where do you see the KO Sammy thing going? You know, it kind of seems like I don't know if they're building towards a breakup or just I'm just reading like they're really pushing the Kevin Owens wanting to be the prize fighter thing, and you know, let's just stop talking, let's punch people and let's fight. But to me, it comes off as it's almost that like he's still sort of annoyed with Sammy about the whole bloodline thing and just And the fact that now that you have Jay back in the picture, it almost just brings up bad memories for him. And it feels like a break comes, but I don't know if that break just leads to, you know, maybe KO's the person that gets sent over to SmackDown, or if it's just a agreed-upon break. You know, I like the Sami KO feud, but I don't know how many times over the course of their career you can go back to the Sami KO feud. But it just feels like there's either unspoken or maybe there is acknowledged kind of tension between the two.
I think they're going to be fine. I think they've broken up and feuded too much, and they know that. And I think it's more likely they end up on separate brands than actually going through a breakup. I think KO comes around to trust Jay, and they're using Kevin Owens' reticence to endorse Jay as a plot point that makes sense and is more about trying to tell a believable story about Jay having a history with a lot of these wrestlers and these wrestlers not trusting him. And they think it's a nice contrast with Sammy. I think we're all conditioned as wrestling fans watching pro wrestling to think in more, you know, bold crayon strokes instead of subtle watercolor layering in terms of the storyline. Like, I think it's possible for Kevin Owens to be a good dude who doesn't trust Jay and Jay to be a good dude who understands why people don't trust him. And we go through a process where they're leery and over time become less leery, but there's not a big blow up. There's not a turn, and they, you know, coexist and have a guarded trust with each other. And that would be my guess when it comes to KO and Sammy. What do you think, Darren?
Yeah, that was my first question after the main event is like, what's going to happen with Sammy and Owens? And I think you could split them back off as singles. I don't see them feuding because you just can't go back to that. That's been done, you know, to pieces. So, but you can get some mileage out of them as solo performers again. Now, whether that's trading, one of those being the guy that gets wound up being traded to SmackDown, it's one way you could take care of that. Or they could just be the guys that still team together on occasion, but also do the solo thing. And it's a way to freshen them up and to get them in separate feuds and get them going as singles, because they're all very good at that, and as well as tag teaming. So yeah, I don't have a problem with that, but I wouldn't turn them against each other. That's just something people, number one, don't want to see, because they like them to teaming up together, and I would just keep them solo.
They have such a history together, and I think people think, yeah, you guys have fought it out before, but if you fight it out again, we're not going to believe it. You've been through too much together.
Mm-hmm.
Dave, back to you. Any follow-up on that or anything else?
I got one more breakup thing. You guys touched upon Judgment Day a little bit, you know, the JD and the Priest thing and everything. And with the JD thing, I kind of have two parts. I get that he – I don't know if – I think they realize it, but I think certainly as viewers we realize it, that there's something – sort of snaky about JD, and it feels like there's some ulterior motive there, but it just also seems like with the fact that he saved them multiple times, which again could be building towards something, but he saved them multiple times and he hasn't really seemed to have done much to cause too much distrust. At least that I've seen.
Yeah.
I've missed stuff here and there. I don't know, like, if I'm actually in Judgment Day, or at least Dominic, like, maybe not Priest, but maybe I'm Dom, I'm like, why can't this guy be in Judgment Day? You know, like, he's kind of hanging around anyways, mm-hmm. and Finn likes him, why can't he just hang out with us?
And you have Dom and Balor in the background, and Priest flipped out on JD, having that look of, jeez. Talk about an overreaction. You know, like this guy's temper is scary and tone it down. JD's just, you know, he's trying to be helpful. And if it doesn't work out, you're questioning his motives and it seems like you're jumping to a conclusion. Like the body language is no accident. The facial expressions are no accident. And they are telling that story. It is kind of like, you know, Drew and New Day where Cole goes, you can kind of see both sides. I just don't think Raw has ever been better written in that respect where there are – this is good shades of gray, where there's a destiny where one of them is going to be a heel and the other is going to be a face, but it's not obvious early on that one person is just all good and the other is all evil in kind of a cartoonish black and white way. And so I just think they're doing a good job with this because things will reveal themselves over time that shed a different light on how they're acting now, but how they're acting now is nuanced enough that it's not obvious where it's going to go, even if you have a pretty strong hunch of where it is.
Yeah, I mean, is there any chance?
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, yeah, is there any chance that, and maybe this is overbooking, but is there any chance that JD ends up turning on Finn, and Finn is the one that's replaced?
JD turns on Finn, and Finn is replaced. So Priest was right all along, but then coexists with JD. I don't know if that's the story I think that they're telling. I hadn't played that out of my head, so I'm kind of thinking it through. I think Priest is better as a babyface, and Balor is better as a heel. So I'm sort of rooting against that being something I can talk myself into thinking might happen. And I don't think it's going to happen, but I'm kind of processing it. What do you think, Darren?
Yeah, that's an intriguing scenario I certainly hadn't thought of. You could go that way. I just wouldn't just the pathway that we've taken, and they haven't alluded to it. They kind of drop, you know, little breadcrumbs about what's going to happen, about overtly telling you, and we haven't really had anything that would lead us to believe that he would turn on him, which might be a reason to do it if you can come up with something logical, I suppose. But it seems like kind of the left field turns they've kind of abandoned and are giving you more backstory with logic for turns. So I don't really see that happening, but if they could come up with a compelling enough story, why not?
Dave, anything else?
I just got a real quick story. I was going to call about 2 weeks ago, and I just was busy, didn't get a chance. And it's good because at first the story was angry, and then after tonight I feel a little bit better after watching Raw. About 2 weeks ago I bought house show tickets for a show that's coming in November, and for me and my son to go. It's my son's first WWE event, and so we're excited about it. It's gonna be great, and really expensive tickets for a house show, like way more. Like, we're sitting in a very small arena. It's not a big arena, and we're like the first. There's the floor, the first level, and second level. We're the front row of the second level, which I thought was good because my son's only seven, so I'm like, we're front row. He can still see. It's small. But we're not on the floor. We're not in the first lower bowl, and it still cost me almost $200, you know, after taxes and stuff. But almost $100 per ticket to go to this, you know, Sunday night house show. but still, I was like, okay, this is fine. And then right after I buy the ticket, I see on Twitter, and maybe I should have been paying close attention, but I see on Twitter the speculation that the Saudi house show the Saudi show is on November 4th. Which I don't know if they've confirmed yet or not, but this house show is on November 5th, the day after the potential Saudi show.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I just spent $200. Who am I going to see on this show? But then after watching tonight, you know, obviously not everyone's going to the Saudi show, and seeing people like Kaiser and even like the Zoe Stark Nia Jax thing. You know, I'm not a big Nia Jax person, but I like Zoe Stark. And so just seeing some of the people tonight, you know, I always kind of figured, well, in my head, I worked out, like, I'll see Ricochet and I'll see Dolph. And then I got Dolph taken away from me. But I was like, I think there's enough supporting cast. And my son doesn't watch week to week. He'll watch when he's awake or I put it on, so he's not gonna have his heart broken if Cody and like Seth aren't there. So I wasn't super concerned about that, but just having sort of an, like, in my mind I was like, how many people can even be at the show if you've got Raw coming out on Monday and you've got the Saudi show and you've got maybe another house show someplace else on like a Friday or Saturday? So maybe poor plan on my part.
Yeah, it is it's unfortunately a bit of a crapshoot when you're buying tickets. I hope you earth. I mean, everybody on it, there's going to be some stars, and maybe the people left behind will be working extra hard because they're getting a chance that they don't normally get to be featured, you know, at a house show. So, you know, you could end up getting emotions and going, why are we running this small building? I'm going to phone it in. Some people, you know, giving me a little extra effort. So maybe there's a positive spin on it.
Yeah.
But it's
yeah,
not the big
cross my fingers.
It's not a full lineup for sure. Yeah. Yeah. Well, Dave, let us know how that show goes. Anything else you want to bring up on Raw?
Yeah. No, I'm good.
All right, cool. Good talking to you. Thanks for calling.
Yeah. All right, thanks a lot, guys.
Good. Yeah, good topics. It's fun to be able to not complain but speculate about the nuanced dynamics and characters and factions and potential breakups. And it's fun covering this type of this. It's fun covering Monday Night Raw lately because of it. I feel that, you know, bad that a lot of people aren't actually seeing it in real time. They're only watching highlights or speeding through it or not watching it at all compared to SmackDown. And there's so many choices and so much wrestling out there. I get it. But I feel like we get, you know, more calls in another era if this was the type of stuff that was being delivered for a kind of a post-show talk format like this. I think there's a lot of people back in the day who have given up on the product or switched to AEW or whatever, who would be liking some of the aspects of this that I think were weak points of WWE in the past.
Agreed, yeah. There's a lot of compelling stuff. If people have dropped off from WWE, that because there were certainly some rough episodes just a few years ago that made the 3 hours kind of drag, and they're doing a good job of filling in that 3 hours with some compelling material and good matchups going on. So yeah, kudos to them.
All right, let's shift to an email from JB from Detroit, turning things a little less complimentary. He says, so when Judgment Day cheat every 20 seconds, Adam Pearce doesn't care, but when Cody and Jay come out, he comes out and tries to drag them back. Where is the logic there? I mean, I guess you can make the case that Judgment Day are part of a faction and they're cheating in a match or they're legally at ringside and Cody and Jay are just extras. And so there's, you know, this weird, you know, sort of internal logic that if you're at ringside at the start of the match and you cheat, that's up to the referee. But if you're adding yourself to the chaos, then that's when he's needed. Aaron, to explain that.
I'm right. Yeah, it's a little bit inconsistent, and it's a very valid point. Yeah, because Judgment Day cheats in like every segment they're in virtually. But yeah, you're like, oh no, we can't have Cody running the ringside. So that was a little bit ridiculous. So it'd be nice to have some consistency there.
Yeah, yeah. He also says, I like Judgment Day as much as the next guy, but how many iterations are we going to have of them versus KO and Sammy? Will this be stretched another 2 months until Survivor Series? I mean, I believe that they have a number of twists and iterations of that, but it could be James match with a lot of other interpersonal dynamics going on with mysteries of who's going to really be loyal and side with whom. So I think they can keep it interesting for two more months, Darren?
I wouldn't push it past Survivor Series. Whatever they're going to eventually do, I would keep it there. And I think they have enough compelling material to last till then. Also, what are they going to do with Rhea, who they're clearly trying to make into a baby face? So that adds a whole nother dynamic. She can't just, or can she just turn into this dastardly heel when she's with them, but also be wildly cheered when she's going up in the women's division? At some point, you've got to address that as well.
What do you think is going to happen with Nia Jax and what they're doing? Oh, I'll get back to JB. He's got other questions. But Nia Jax got interviewed tonight. She seems to just relish in the boos. And I think the fans are booing her in a way that's different than Dom, which is like, we didn't pay money to boo you. We're booing you because we really don't like you. And I think she knows it. And I think she relishes it and likes it. And, you know, for better or for worse. But is it possible for Ripley to be gone for a few weeks because of Jax, come back, feud with Jax, get revenge, be cheered, and then go back to standing next to Dom who gets booed? Like, are they Or you know, some people said, well, maybe Nia Jax ends up in Judgment Day and Rhea Ripley breaks from Dom. Does that hurt the Dom act? Is that even on the table as a possibility? What do you think they're doing here with Jax? Because she is just going, I'm beating up everybody, anyone and everybody in my path.
Right. I thought it maybe was like a short-term thing to give Rhea an opponent since they kind of run through pretty much everybody except Becky. I thought they were headed that way, but the way she's dominated and she's run over, you know, virtually most of the people, she must be sticking around or that's going to really make your women's division look terrible. So she must be sticking around. But if they were to do that and have Rhea, and clearly they're going to try to make her face, and they were to put Nia into the Judgment Day, that would probably work with her and Dom.
or Dom single and JD and Nia get it on.
That could also work as well. So they might be on to something. I mean, it's like these wholesale switches in the Judgment Day. It's taking a risk because the originals had such great chemistry and they worked very well. So you're taking a little bit of a risk. I don't know if I would have chosen Nia for all that role with the people that you have available, but yeah, we'll see. I mean, her and Dom teamed up could be money.
Going back to JB, he goes, it seems like they're doing the Sammy J bloodline story, but with JD and Priest now. Yes and no. Sammy really, I mean, yes in the sense that Sammy really wanted to be in and JD wants to be in. And, you know, with Judgment Day, it was like there was just a kind of a constant skepticism whether Sammy belonged and mind games. And you didn't, you know, Sammy was given an impression of whether he had a chance to be accepted or not. And it just took all these twists and turns. With JD and Priest, it's more straight line. You know, Balor and Dom think JD's cool, and why is Priest so uptight about it? And Priest is very consistently clear he doesn't want him anywhere near them and doesn't trust him. So to me, it's different enough that it doesn't feel like I would be negative on it. When you have factions and you are telling a story of somebody who wants to be part of the faction, then, you know, and someone else doesn't want him in there, there's different ways to tell that story, but I don't think you're not allowed to tell a similar story. And maybe JD isn't even, or JB's not even being negative about it in his email. He's just saying it seems like they're doing that, uh-huh. And I would agree, but I would say that there's enough of a difference that it doesn't feel derivative or copycat.
Sure, yeah. I mean, that was the bloodline thing was a very successful formula, so why wouldn't you try that with some other characters? Yeah, it's enough difference where I don't think there's too much overlap, but also you can see where they're like, hey, we had a good formula. Maybe we can apply it over here with these guys. And there's nothing wrong with that. And it's working successfully. So, but yeah, they're going to have to peak it at some point. Kind of like the whole bloodline thing is, you know, kind of got, while it was an excellent angle, you can go with stuff for too long and before it gets repetitive.
And JB also says, I wonder how the slow burn Drew heel turn has been affected by the release of Matt Riddle. I've always loved the show and go VIP. Yeah, I mean, they're having to take a different course with this. When we talk about, it's just, are they going to get, how long are they going to drag this out? Like, they had an interruption. Obviously, Riddle was a key component in how Drew was going to turn. I don't know if, you know, it'd probably have to be Drew in an interview down the line somewhere talking about what might have been planned. I don't know who else would go public with that. Yeah, I don't even know if we'll ever know. You know, it might have to be, you know, like someone on the inside eventually telling that story. But, yeah, I mean, obviously they have to go a different direction with it. I think it would have been a slow burn anyway. I don't know if they changed the timeline, but they certainly have changed the path and the method of turning him.
Yeah, and it's a shame that they invested all that time and they didn't get to pay that off. But, yeah, he was certainly – unless I missed it, they didn't mention him tonight. So they just moved right past that and gone on in a different direction. And, sometimes that happens, and that's they'll work around it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let me throw to you, Darren, if there's something you want to bring up from Raw that we haven't yet.
Let me see. Look through my notes here. I thought Ricochet cut a decent promo. He's getting better. His road to improving on promos continues, so that was encouraging to see. and it looks like they have something set up for him after the Seth feud. So that's good that they're keeping him in mind and they see some value in him.
Do you think it was – we talked about Nia Jax, but should Zoe Stark have lasted 3 minutes decisively to her with the type of push that they've been giving her? Does that define her down? Or with whatever they're doing with the Nia Jax, that's actually kind of necessary. Zoe's new enough. Nia has, you know, enough of a history as a pushed act and just physically is so dominant that it's okay. I mean, was it worth it?
I didn't think so. She was coming off of that teaming with Trish Stratus, and it looked like, okay, they're building something here. They got a new NXT person. And now she just gets out there and gets run over. And it tells me that maybe they don't see anything in her. I would certainly get that impression if I was, you know, a regular viewer or someone in the crowd after I thought she was really on a good track, and this has certainly derailed that. So I don't know if maybe they weren't satisfied with where she was going, but that to me sends a message.
The Tegan Knox Natalya follow-up I thought was good. You know, last week Tegan was supposed to wrestle and answer the open challenge that was originally scripted, and they changed it to Natalya, and they turned this into kind of a multi-week program now where Natalya and Tegan battled, and Tegan got the win in less than 3 minutes to basically earn consideration from Adam Pearce that she would then get to face the winner of the Becky Tiffany Stratton match from Saturday at NXT No Mercy on Peacock. So I like what they did there too. You know, it's one of those examples of there's something written down, word gets out, and then it's changed, and we see why they changed it. They came up with another idea to add a twist that took them, you know, 2 more weeks deep into the storyline. What'd you think of the Tegan Knox Becky interaction? And what'd you think of it? And what do you make of it? Like, what are they setting up a Becky Tegan tag team? Are they setting up Tegan cheating to beat Becky and turning heel? Where do you think this might go?
Well, first of all, I was glad that they kind of addressed the situation that people had heard about. So that was a nice touch to add a little story to that. But yeah, I'm intrigued on where this goes, presuming that Becky retains the NXT title. And we don't know that for sure. Or maybe Tegan will play a role in the outcome of that match, perhaps. And that will lead to her maybe turning against Becky or something like that. She seems more comfortable in the babyface role just from what I've seen of her. And I'm also, but I'm glad that she's getting a chance to, you know, show what she can do. I'm a little concerned because they've done these start and stop pushes with her before, and you know, she'll be featured for 2 or 3 weeks and then she's on the back burner. I hope this one lasts longer, and I'm skeptical, but we'll see where it goes. I'm glad that she's being featured, and the women's division is kind of, they run through most of the people, especially with this Nia Jax thing. So they needed to bring in some fresh people and push them appropriately. So I hope this one, we get to see what she can do and she gets the opportunity to either fail or succeed.
How are you feeling about Big Bronson Reed stealing Big Bill's nickname? Man, plagiarism. What do you think of him beating Otis and the match itself?
I did put Big in my notes also because I was like, oh my God, how creative. But yeah, back in the 80s, they would always have somebody named Big, like Big Scott Hall or something like that.
Yeah.
So yeah, it looks like they're back on track with Bronson Reed. So that's good to see. And hey, kind of disappointing to see Otis and, you know, the Alpha team as the sacrificial lambs again, but I'm glad that Reed's somebody they could get a lot out of. When I saw his run in Impact, I was very impressed with him. And if he has, you know, an advocate behind the scenes, he's somebody that could go pretty far, have a pretty high ceiling. And I hope we're back on track with that, because it looked like they had kind of stopped a few weeks back. I forgot who he lost to, but they look good here, and hope to see big things from them.
How about the Seth Nakamura payoff, I guess, at this point? Seth issuing an open challenge, Nakamura either anticipating what Seth is going to say or having a great production team instantly putting something together to answer him with captions and cut camera cuts and clips, and accepting his challenge and setting the date and the terms, which was a follow-up on what they had said You know, initially, Seth said initially, which is you name the time, the place, and the stip. I want you in the ring so bad. I'll put my title on the line, and you name the place and the stip. Nakamura did. What do you think of not necessarily the final chapter of hyping it because they still got next week, but they certainly got to the end point in terms of officially announcing the match. Did you like this journey?
Yeah, and number one, I vote for a good production team that they just put that together for him and that he has a secret production team that kind of follows him around and does subtitles and whatnot. So I vote for that direction. But as far as the build-up, I like that, and I like that they addressed why in the prior weeks he wouldn't answer the challenge that Seth laid out for him. I'm like, okay, this is why. He was showing patience. He was waiting to call his stipulations at the appropriate time. So now it kind of makes sense if you were watching a couple weeks ago where he had the title shot right in front of him and didn't accept it. This is the reason why. So it's good detail work. So, and I enjoyed the backstory being put up there.
It worked well enough for me. I mean, the idea of, you know, Seth going, if you don't answer this, I'm just going to relinquish my offer to give you, a loser in your last title match, a rematch. I get it. It's like, okay, I want to get you in the ring, but my God, I'm giving you a really good offer. So accept it. This is enough. You know, you've dragged this out enough. And Nakamura kind of took it to the brink, knowing he would get to the brink, but knowing Seth wanted him in the ring so bad. And he, you know, the idea is Nakamura believes he has the psychological warfare, that advantage that he's getting in Seth's head, and that he was willing to even risk just saying yes immediately to a title rematch because part of him winning and beating Seth is messing with his head for a few weeks before agreeing to the match. That's part of what gives him an edge. So, yes, there was a risk that Seth would withdraw the offer, but I think Nakamura knew I got Seth right where I want him, and I'm going to drag this out. So all's well that ends well. You know, I mean, initially I was like, why would a challenger not accept the title shot if they're losing their first opportunity? And we have an answer. It's mind games. It's head games. And Nakamura was really good in the vignettes. If the vignettes weren't good with him, I don't think it would have worked. But he comes across as believable and sinister and, you know, yeah, just messing with Seth's mind and bringing his family into it. So I give a thumbs up to this. It's an unconventional approach, but I think they pulled it off better than really I think most people would have anticipated. Almost anyone would have anticipated.
Right, yeah, I didn't expect too much out of this, and I think they delivered, not necessarily on the match at the last special, but the build-up has been stellar.
Yeah. Anything else you want to bring up, Darren, before we sign off?
Just that I really enjoyed the Dominic against Dragon Lee match. I was disappointed that the prior week Dominic just got run over in 3 minutes by Cody Rhodes.
Yes, that crossed my mind. Yeah. I mean, they gave him a win, but they hyped up Dragon Lee. He loses to a guy who lost in 3 minutes to Cody. I mean,
now that makes him look like trash.
I think if Raw was a bad show right now with bad wrestling and bad character development, bad storylines, I probably would have led with that and ranted on it. But I'm sort of like, Cody's a top guy. Dom's not. There shouldn't be any shame in losing to Cody, so I don't want to like give them a complex over doing a clean finish. You know, we root for that. You know, sometimes you win, sometimes you lose. Dom's got a fourth level title. You know, it's not an IC or US title. It's certainly not one of the world titles. It's not even the main NXT title. So it's not that big of a deal losing to somebody like Cody who took Roman to the brink. But yeah, then to hype Dragon Lee and have him lose to Dom, it does, you know. Yeah, I mean, I get it, but I don't have a rant in me on it. I mean, I just, you know, sometimes people win, sometimes they lose. But, yeah, it did cross my mind, like, why did you have to do that last week? Did you really need to do that? Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, that's something that they need to anticipate. Because sitting there just made Dragon Lee look really bad that, you know, because I mean, Dominic looked barely competent last week. It's just a guy who's just getting steamrolled, and now Dragon Lee, who they've hyped, you know, did a little video package and everything. It's like, oh, well, this guy can't be that good.
Yeah. Yep. All right. Darren, tell people a little bit about what you do for The Torch.
I do the Impact Wrestling Results every Thursday for the Pro Wrestling Torch, so check those out. And me and John Laszlo host an Impact Wrestling podcast every week, so check that out as well. And if you want to find me on socials, on Instagram and Threads, I'm at DKLSTL.
Excellent. Thanks to our callers. Thanks to our emailers. Thanks to our listeners. Thank you, Darren. And we will talk to you all next time.